Good morning. It is 7:49 and you are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Thursday, August 2nd, 2012. I'm Holly Keene and this is Raven News. Climate change and other environmental issues may seem like problems for the sciences, but at least one social activist believes they are problems for the humanities, too. Camila Thorndike studied environmental humanities at Whitman College and now hopes to apply her unusual education towards resolving major global challenges. Thorndike is spending the summer in residence at the Sheldon Jackson campus as a Sitka Fellow. She spoke with KCAW's Robert Woolsey.
Since graduating in 2010, Thorndike has been working for Imagine Greater Tucson. When she talks about her work, the idea of environmental humanities starts to sound less and less far-fetched.
What I do professionally is try to bring groups of people from all different types of geographies, demographics, perspectives, sectors together to look at what it means to govern ourselves.
Thorndike says this is about how to live well in a place, a core value of literature and philosophy, and a means of bringing about change as important as science. Thorndike's mother is a Chilean who grew up in and eventually escaped the Pinochet dictatorship. Her father is a fourth-generation Oregonian. The family has been rebuilding ties in Chiloé, one of the largest islands in the country's archipelago. Thorndike would like to focus her work there, but not as an outsider. She thinks effective change has to come from within.
There's a group called Chiloé Como Vamos that I'd be looking to collaborate with. It creates a gathering place for citizens to come together and define, you know, what it is about living there that they value and enact on that.
Thorndike's bio for the Sitka Fellows program is full, as you might expect, of abstract language like eco-social preservation and culturally attuned conservation. But the merger of the humanities and conservation is not just about the mind, it's also about the feet. One of her projects is to improve bike lanes and routes in Castro, the capital of Chiloé.
People of any generation or political viewpoint can get involved to say, hey, you know, this is all of our land, this is all of our community, and how can we make it work for all of us instead of, say, just automobile drivers.
Thorndike says it's important to make the process accessible and to make a statement that invites people rather than pushes them away. Are better bike lanes on an island in Chile a route towards solving global environmental problems? Thorndike thinks so. When she was the baccalaureate speaker at her college graduation, her speech was called, "We Are Not Going to Change the World." Thorndike has had a couple of years to reconsider.
Just really grates on me and a lot of my peers who are working in this field, that expectation that it's on one person's shoulder or one generation's shoulders. And so what I realized, however, it's leaving school that you really, you know, you got to dedicate yourself to at least trying, that it's not just going to happen.
Thorndike says it's time for all hands on deck. There is probably no issue, in her view, that is not ultimately an environmental issue.
It isn't going to go on the way that we've been living and even the natural cycles that we have unless it's a focal point. So to try and to try with all of your heart is, I think, what is demanded of us.
Camila Thorndike is one of 8 Sitka Fellows in residence on the Sheldon Jackson campus. The program runs through August. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The Alaska Marine Highway System is moving forward with plans to rebuild the Prince Rupert Ferry Terminal. Officials are negotiating 50-year leases allowing the system to improve the British Columbia port. Ferry Chief Mike Newsall says it's been a priority for a while.
We've had failures with the marine structures previously, did some emergency repairs. It needs to be replaced, and our goal is to do a complete replacement of the marine structures. And then in the future, during this long-term lease, potentially look at the terminal building itself.
The dock and terminal offices are on Port of Prince Rupert land. An associated parcel is owned by the Canadian National Railway. Newsall says the state is in active negotiations with both parties. Rupert is about 90 miles south of Ketchikan. It's at the western end of the branch of the Canadian highway system. The nearly 50-year-old terminal is commonly used by travelers driving in or out of Alaska. The legislature this year authorized spending $9 million on the project. A separate 2009 authorization was for $7.5 million.
It is eligible for federal aid funding, and that's what we intend to take advantage of to do the project. But in order to do that, we have to have a long-term lease because we have to be guaranteed of getting basically a payback on that investment over the course of time.
Ferries briefly stopped using the terminal 4 years ago while it was being repaired. The state is building another terminal in the southern part of the southeast system. It's at the north end of Annette Island and will replace an older terminal in nearby Metlakatla. The ferry Lituya provides twice daily, 5 days a week service between that city and Ketchikan. Neusel says the terminal will cut the travel time in half.
It'll save us some fuel. It'll allow us to do some things with the schedule, I think, that will be beneficial in terms of cost savings for operating that vessel. So it has some positives to it, and I'm looking forward to implementing them and seeing how it actually works out.
He says the terminal should be completed this fall. A 15-mile road connecting the terminal to town was built several years ago. Officials have also looked for a site for a new terminal in Saxman, which is closer to Annette Island than Ketchikan. That would reduce travel time even more, but no decision has been made. The next time an earthquake or other disaster unleashes near you, Twitter, Google, and Facebook might be useful places to turn. And not just you. Disaster response agencies are plunging into social media. They can develop better situational awareness by seeking out your online gripes and observations. Digital platforms also provide an avenue to give more frequent official updates and correct misinformation during a catastrophe. Northwest News Network correspondent Tom Bantz reports.
Caleb Yuriki has gone through the kind of disaster the Pacific Northwest is supposedly due for. I met him in Sendai, Japan, and asked about a fateful day, March 11th last year. Ironically, that day, Yuriki was organizing a fundraiser for earthquake victims in his faraway hometown of Christchurch, New Zealand, when the tables turned. You remember the magnitude 9.0 quake that rocked northeast Japan.
It lasted for 5 minutes. We had to evacuate to go outside, and then it just started snowing for 30 minutes. That's all I remember is being cold.
The recent university graduate was unhurt. His next instinct was to locate other expat workers in the city and confirm they were okay. But the electricity was out and would stay out for the next 3 days. Phone lines were inoperable or jammed. Yuriki says in Sendai, cellular service and mobile data came back first.
A lot of people could use their smartphones, so they access Facebook and would update to say that they're okay.
Yuriki says he wasn't a big fan of Facebook until this happened.
I didn't actually think it would be as useful as it was, but I would say that after the earthquake, everyone was on Facebook, and so I'm glad I do have a Facebook account because I was going to close it down beforehand.
Yuriki also made sure his survivor status was posted on Google Person Finder. Google activated this temporary internet database to help friends and relatives find missing people in the disaster zone. This is a function traditionally performed by local government or the Red Cross. So what's Google doing here? Ask Christian Adams. He's a software developer with Google's in-house crisis response team.
In times of crisis, people will go to the tools that they know and use regularly. In their daily lives, people use Google Search. They use Google Maps. These are the places they go for information.
He says Google is not trying to be an alternative to official sources, rather to make those sources more effective.
Technology is changing so quickly these days that it's hard for anybody to keep up with the new ways of doing things and the best and latest ways of publishing data. So we try to work with many organizations to help them do that better and to get their information out.
Adams says Google Person Finder accumulated more than 600,000 records pertaining to the Japanese earthquake and tsunami. That compares to 200,000 by the Japanese Red Cross. One difference is that the Red Cross verifies entries to its missing persons database, while Google does not. Government agencies have been slower to jump onto social media platforms than the private sector. Among recent converts are some Northwest wildfire incident commanders. Chris Erickson is a public information officer for the U.S. Forest Service. This summer, she says social media is allowing her to listen and respond from the fire command post in ways she could never before.
We can sort of hear over the backyard fence discussions among neighbors. We can join groups. We can hear discussion groups and blogs, and we can get a sense or a pulse of the community and how it's feeling about our response efforts.
Change is also coming to county emergency operations centers. In a major disaster, the center in Vancouver, Washington, now has several workstations dedicated to staying on top of Twitter, YouTube, public posts on Facebook, and other social media sites. Emergency manager Cheryl Bledsoe says those channels can provide real-time intelligence from what is basically an army of citizen journalists.
They're seeing, you know, something on fire and taking pictures of it, and it gives us a much better picture in here of what the disaster looks like outside these four walls.
It's already up here.
Bledsoe has two computer monitors on her desk. She scans and sorts multiple incoming streams of internet chatter with practiced ease.
A lot of different things I monitor, but there's...
Yeah. Bledsoe knows you can't believe everything you read on the internet.
You do see fake information go into the social media streams, but it also gets corrected very quickly.
During a big emergency, Bledsoe hopes Facebook and Twitter users collaborate to solve some problems themselves without drawing on overextended emergency responders. But not everyone has a smartphone. Plus, there are people who don't use social media at all. What about them?
We still use emergency alert systems, which go out through radio and television broadcast. A lot of that is changing to where it's gathering in some new forms of technology. So even gaming systems like the Xbox is being looked at as being a provider of emergency alerts.
Of course, the Xbox, televisions, and the internet require electricity, which may be out. So don't throw away that battery-powered radio just yet. It's still part of the plan. I'm Tom Bonsi reporting.
And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or'd like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Sitka's own weather. Today, expect rain with highs around 58, south wind 10 miles per hour. Tonight, rain with lows around 52, southwest wind 10 miles per hour. And Friday, more rain, highs around 59.